The following program contains violence and coarse language.
It is showtime, baby! Here we go!
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Yes, it's time once again for Radio Free X-Man.
What's Radio Free X-Man?
We've got 11,000 people at NASA trying to figure that out right now.
Radio Free X-Man's beloved cast of broadcast entertainers are back.
You all know people like this. You may be people like this.
Now, the charming and delightful president of X-Man Mortgage and host of Radio Free X-Man, Bob.
Your head is freakishly large.
Brooks.
And by coarse language, of course, he means Birdie. Water hazard.
Dog leg.
Long ball. Dog. Hey, hey, hey. Don't be looking at me that way. You are listening to Radio Free X-Man, the vastest, most popular talk show in this office.
On Sunday afternoon at 3.
On Sunday afternoon at 3. We rule that spot.
That's
on
right.
1070 AM. We are Radio Free X-Man, radiofreexman.com. You can always visit us and generally make fun of us like everyone else does. We feature knowledge about the mortgage industry, knowledge about taxation and taxes, because we have what you might call a knowledge base about tax, taxation, mortgage, finance, and finance-related things.
And a lovely knowledge base she is.
Indeed, indeed. We will also pepper you with various internet minutiae and trivia and stuff that you'll find just generally fascinating for about 20 seconds before you move on to whatever thought you were looking at the TV with.
Let's get back to the lovely knowledge base sitting next to you, because I don't think she's been properly introduced.
Of course not.
To my left, and that's the only time you'll find her on my left, is the tax goddess. Take a bow, tax goddess. Much further to my left would be Brewing Frog. However,
he's in Rockport.
That's right. He's so far to the left, he's in Rockport. Let me make sure I'm facing towards the summit here.
Yeah, I'll have to power up the transmitter a little to get him to be able to hear this. Probably well past the illegal stage.
We switch the frequency from the tower over to the one in the beacon. We pump up the wattage.
Not today, we don't pump up the wattage.
Wolfman Jack. Digging the seed with my record machine. I'm so right tonight I almost can't handle myself.
Just bang a couple of beer cans together, and he'll be right there. He telepathic. Rented lips. He communicates telepathically that way.
But he's going to be with us on the phone, communicating telephonically a new recipe, I understand.
Yeah, you know, he's very cooking-related, and as his name would imply, brewing-related, too. He brews his own beer.
He told me that great recipe for chili where you take a six-pack of beer and pork and beef, and you fry up the pork and beef and pour one beer in there and then drink the other five.
Now, if you want an excellent chili recipe, the tax goddess has got you covered.
Well, all right. I mean, we're going to have time for that because we're never talking about anything in particular on this show.
This is a mortgage program, and while we're on the subject of mortgage, here's what makes it different. Here's what sets it apart.
He's taking my thunder.
I am.
He's a very bad man.
I'm going to allude to this. I'm going to let you in on a secret about it, and that is it uses cinnamon and chocolate.
Which go very well together. In fact, I had some Belgian dark chocolate not long ago that had a hint of cinnamon in it, and it was outstanding.
Yeah, but don't freak out, because it's not like it's chocolate chili or cinnamon chili or anything like that. All that does is it cuts down the acidity, and it makes for a very smooth chili.
Well, am I even going to bother with the recipe now?
No, there's got to be more to it than that. Come on.
Well, we'll post that on RadioFreeXman.com.
All he did was allude to the recipe before eluding the blows that you were throwing at him.
That's right.
Allude.
I've assumed crash position.
Honey, let's call the Brewing Frog and toss him on the air live here. Brewing Frog hotline ringing now.
Hello.
Rob, they just drop you in a boiling pot, don't they?
Yeah, or I'll make all sorts of riveting noises, right?
And speaking of boiling pots, while we're on the subject of mortgage, we called you today to discuss fish and fish preparation. Specifically, I'm on a diet now, Robbie.
A diet?
X-Man is on a diet.
And he's on the seafood diet.
That's exactly right. And now that we have dispatched with that old joke for the last time ever.
Wait. Okay, now we've dispatched with the joke.
What fish are you looking at preparing?
Brewing Frog, I want a light, kind of not-so-fishy fish, and I want it prepared in a very fat-free manner, yet still flavorful, with a nice bouquet.
Well, I cooked some chicken the other night. I took some bacon and cut it up into very small pieces and rendered it down.
Yep.
And then I pulled off that nice crispy bacon, cut the breast down the middle, stuffed the bacon in it, stuffed in some Swiss cheese, breaded, and then fried the chicken in the bacon grease.
Let Brewing Frog, the scream I hear is my diet saying, no!
It's either the stereo scream, that's your taste buds going, yes!
Yeah, baby, yeah!
You can look at me and tell them my taste buds have been saying yes all my life.
But I gotta tell you, low-cal something, all you really need to do is bake your fish.
Baked fish, okay.
Yes, if you bake your fish. Now, also, you're
I did that, but I couldn't pull the can out of the oven. Because I was having baked tuna, right?
That, but go down and get you run down to your local Bed Bath & Beyond. Thank you very much for that free plug. And you pick up a jelly roll pan, and you get a little rack that'll fit up on top of it. Season your fish and stick it in the oven.
Okay.
You can, take whatever, fish you find good. Tilapia. There's snapper you get down here quite a bit.
I've never noticed this. Can you buy snapper at the supermarket?
It depends on what they're getting in fresh. A lot of the local HEB stores have a pretty good fish counter.
Randall's does pretty good, too.
I guess they count fish for inventory, but why would you need a good fish counter?
Now, I'm looking at a canal right now. There's one mullet, two mullets.
Yeah, we got two mullets in this room here, I'm telling you that.
And one on the phone.
Why can't I find a mullet with a checkbook? Hey, you, mullet, give me your check. Anyway.
Moose, Rocco, help the man with his checkbook.
Really, if you want a good fish counter, or a fish counter in terms of, okay, this area of the store always has a very good selection, the fish are always fresh, and it's going to vary by, depends on who the manager at that particular store is. And,
really?
And like anything, if you go to some place and they always seem to have good fish, the fish are always in good shape.
Because they've been doing a lot of fish ups.
They'll clean them for you, scale them for you if necessary, do all the work that is necessary, and you always have a good experience. Hey, go shop there often. And some places won't even bother to do that. And the fish they have smell, fishy, which is not a good thing. You want a fish that doesn't really smell like anything.
Well, if it has a fishy aroma, then it would be smelt, right? Ah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
But seriously, folks,
like salt, you fool.
You can put fish fillets in a dish full of milk for a couple hours, and that'll take away 99% of that smell, won't it?
And then you can leave that milk for a really great practical joke.
Exactly.
Want some cookies with that, dear?
Why do these cornflakes taste like fish?
Why did these cornflakes jump out of my bowl and run away?
Run away? It's more like they just flopped around the table and looked confused. Yeah.
Well, now, Brewing Frog, I'm surprised that you didn't bring up the obvious thing to think, which is maybe just a very light olive oil and then garlic, right? Isn't that a good way to prepare fish?
Well, yeah. Well, I was going to suggest before I was so rudely interrupted with a smelt joke. Oh, my God. How to heave one train of thought right in front of
me. Yeah, give me some fresh toe cheese jacks and some.
Yeah, really? No, we call it tofu now. Anyway.
And it's the same stuff.
Well, some has a more complicated aroma and terroir. But anyway, if we're going to work with something like that, a light oil, if you're looking at a diet, then what you want to apply your oil with is a little brush.
Think of it
like a paintbrush, like you'd based
mascara brush.
And I
borrowed
one
from Tax Goddess.
To get more flavor, you can take various herbs and infuse your oil with the herbs. And then just paint the stuff on there and put more herbs on it, or some type of dry ground herb.
All right.
That will not only add a lot of flavor, it'll pull some of that oil out.
So I'm going to do snapper. I'm going to do like a suspension of garlic and olive oil. And what spice should I put in there, sir?
Spice? Sounds like you got plenty of good spice on there already.
Spice, baby.
That's right.
But really, no, I meant to say herb.
Well,
my apologies,
I tell you what,
herb.
You put little thin slices of lemon on top of that, and that will give you a nice balance.
Oh, yeah.
But don't add lemon juice to it until after you get it out of the oven. Because if you put the lemon juice on there before you stick it in the oven, it will make the juice bitter.
And it will resent you, and it won't go to college. And it'll never get a job.
But at least you don't have to send it money.
It'll act like those ingrates in Lebanon. But I wanted a big cruise ship to get out of the war zone.
And on the subject of mortgage, what did you think about that what do we call that? It's not an expungement.
It's called a war.
Well, yeah. As in,
yeah, it's like you know, what did you think when you bought tickets to go to a country controlled by, oh, I don't know, terrorists? Come on, yeah. Idiot. No, it's like, hey, I've had a real cheap place to vacation this year. Lebanon! You know, I can't get my head around that one. It's like a terrible episode of The Honeymooners.
Well, there's a lot of American immigrants from Lebanon, specifically over the last 30 years since the Islamo-fascists have gone nuts there and started the civil war and driven out a lot of Christian families and that sort of thing. So there are a lot of people who have distant family members still there and go back to visit. It's not so much like a vacation. It's more like keeping up with the folks back home. But boy, did those terrorists make it harder.
Yeah, but what I found interesting is to the tune of 25,000. That's what I found interesting. That's a lot of folks.
That's right. And Nancy Pelosi upbraided President Bush for charging these people the cost of airfare to get them out. And then we find out 3 years earlier, Nancy Pelosi had voted for the law that requires people to pay that airfare back to the government.
Typical.
I had not
liberal.
Heard that one. How delicious.
Yeah, and hardly anyone's calling her on the carpet for it.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's why we're here, you see? That's why we have such an amazing listenership.
They're amazing, all right.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you, sir, and you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
I guess if you're Hezbollah, or as I like to call them, Hezzy, you know, you got problems when even the Arab League is saying you guys are out of line and you're a bunch of screaming squirrels. Stop
well, here's
it.
The thing. The Arabs are more afraid of Iran than they are of Israel. And when they see Hezbollah acting militarily like that, they think Iran is trying to expand its Shiite Persian non-Arab empire. And they kind of get their knees knocking together and start speaking in tacit support of Israel.
Right. I mean, well, yeah, the quiet fact that everyone must acknowledge is that Persians are not Arabs and Arabs are not Persians. And when all of Araby sees that Iran is exercising a lot of power like that and trying to become, in fact, the seat of Islam, well, that's a little scary.
Well, here's two facts for you. One, that Iran has been very content to, you know, fight wars via proxies and thus, you know, not have, you know, operational control of things.
Yeah, they learned that trick from the Soviets.
Have a little fig leaf to hide behind. Yeah, they had some pretty good teachers on that. But here's the second fact. Now, you'd think that, you know, proxies, they're not going to give them, you know, their neatest and newest toys and things to go boom. Well, that's not the case. Just recently, they gave the Hezbollah not only a lovely Iranian-made C-802 anti-ship missile, which they
silkworm.
Yes, which they shot at an Israeli missile cruiser, which bonked off the side of the ship and blew up in the water. Good job, guys. Nice Iranian workmanship.
That's right. Made in China.
They also gave them a Zelzal missile, which is a medium-range heavy missile, which is generally designed to carry chemical munitions. The Israelis spotted it being trucked into position and blew it up before they could fire the thing.
That's right. Now, they played laser tag with it.
Yeah, Kerr Bluey. But here's
tag
the point.
Your hit.
Here's the point. They're giving Hezbollah their nicest toys to blow things up with. Now, we're trying to, you know, make nice and get them to stop doing nuclear research. And, hey, guess what? They're going to be giving bombs to Looney Tunes like this.
Well, Michael Rubin, the analyst, had put it this way, and I think that this is a pretty accurate picture. Once we backtracked on our firm position and started offering Iran carrots like benign nuclear electricity plants, Iran and every other Arab country made the assumption that we were getting weak. And when that happened, Iran decided they could activate Hezbollah and that we wouldn't do anything about it. But the Arabs were terrified of the idea that we were weak because that meant Iran was the strong horse, and they're genuinely afraid of Iranian expansion. So rather than coming all in to support Hezbollah, the Arab countries held back and stayed away and spoke in tacit support of Israel, and now Hezbollah, and by extension Syria and Iran, are hanging out there on their own, and it doesn't look good.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer group of guys.
This is the present moment. Now, what's going to happen in a week? What's going to happen in 2 weeks? Now, I had seen not long ago that the Israelis had thrown down a 72-hour threat, I guess, for lack of a better term, to Syria to stop its support of Hezbollah and stop its resupply of their fighters in southern Lebanon.
That's when it gets interesting, Robbie, when Syria and Israel come to a little bit more of a head, shall we say.
Well, I mean, the Syrian record against the Israelis is not a good one. In fact, I think the word is that they completely beat the, you know, the snot out of them the last time they had a fight.
Yeah, they've been blanked.
Yeah, and I think what was the Syrian record against Israeli jets was, what was it, 82 jets for the Israelis and none for the Syrians. So they're not, you know, I imagine they're none too happy about going up and getting in a furball with them again.
Yeah, isn't it interesting because most of the countries around Israel have not a hope of a conventional war outcome going well for them. So what they're doing, and by they, you can fill in whomever you want to fill in, is they're stepping up the non-conventional war, the unconventional war, Hezbollah and stuff like that. And Israel, I guess, just says, well, look, we're going to deal with that too. And they're dealing with it pretty effectively, although they are catching a lot of Katyusha rockets lately.
Yeah.
Eight this morning, right?
I'm amazed at the fact that, you know, the world press and the usual suspects are looking at this in such a, you know, blasé manner. Those particular rockets were initially designed by the Soviets to be essentially an anti-infantry barrage missile that they would launch hundreds of them at a time, but what they suspected were gatherings of infantry and whatnot else. They're essentially anti-personnel weapons. They're designed to just slaughter people by the hundreds.
Right.
And they're using these things against civilian populations.
To what degree?
With the intention of killing civilians, as many as they can do so.
Yep.
Brewing Frog, I heard the term reprisals used in the mainstream media today to discuss what Israel was doing. Is Israel, in fact, doing any reprisals? Are they targeting citizens? I don't think that they're doing that. Isn't that what a reprisal is?
Wow,
if you do it, I'll do it too. If you firebomb my city, London, I'll firebomb Dresden, like in World War II.
To put them in the position of saying, look what you made me do.
Right.
I would think that it's more along the lines of, okay, they've gone over and killed, you know, many people. They're going to kill a lot more unless you go and make them stop. And the only way to make them stop is to blow up their toys and kill them.
But it's so totally morally unequivalent. I mean, I heard this week that the Hezbollah gunners were setting up roadblocks outside the villages in southern Lebanon to prevent villagers from leaving because they need them as human shields.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, get ready for this one. As soon as the Israelis start moving in, they're just going to machine gun those people dead.
No doubt.
And I will also bet you a dollar that they're going to have, you know, handy video crews from, you know, your friends at either CNN or Al Jazeera. I'm not quite sure which is worse.
And the gunners will be wearing Israeli uniforms.
Oh, well, I wouldn't even know about that. They'll just film the dead bodies and you know, look at what the Israelis did and then produce a couple of handy eyewitnesses to the entire slaughter who will tell you a lurid tale that's probably going to get, you know, like any fish story, get bigger with each telling. And the media will breathlessly and unquestionably report it as fact.
Well, I don't think that stuff works quite as well as it used to.
Not
thanks,
the blogosphere.
Thanks in no small part to radio shows like this one, bravely
Absolutely.
Forging new territory.
Where we talk about nothing but mortgage.
That's right. And on the subject of mortgage.
Cook me a fish, Robbie.
Okay, very good. I've packed in some explosives, and I can see the bait fish out there right now. There's actually quite a few mullet down here right now.
That's the flash cooking method.
Yeah, but we're not talking about haircuts. You are in rock part after all.
It's very nice. We were able to get down here in a short order, so it's kind of a nice deal. I like the place.
Good for you.
And Bob is doing a lot better, so I am very happy. I was worried sick about the guy.
Bob is the brewing uncle, right?
Yes, Dad's youngest brother.
Well, I bet he was glad to see you.
Well, yeah, glad to see a lot of us, really. It was like lots of smiles and laughs, so good thing.
Cook them all a fish and have a great time and come back and see us.
Will do.